Hello and welcome to episode 80 of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. I am Patrick Macias, the author of the new book, Mondo Tokyo.
And I'm Matt Ault, the author of the book, Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. Available at your favorite bookseller near you, hopefully.
Walden Books, B. Dalton's.
Exactly. And if it's not, I request you buy a copy off of Amazon and slip it onto the stacks there, please.
And it's another episode here with some news and a feature about stuff happening in Japan, stuff that happened to Japan. I don't really know what tense we're living in anymore, Matt. Is this the future tense? Is this the past tense? It's certainly tense out there.
It's always days of future past. Japan is a full day ahead of America, at least in terms of the time zone. So we literally are in the future, if only by what? What's the time difference now? Is it like
13, 14 hours or something like that? So when everyone's waking up to watch Saturday morning cartoons, for us, it's what? It's Saturday Night Live or something like that? I don't remember.
Are Saturday morning cartoons even a thing? I'm following in the footsteps of many human beings this era by not having children. So I don't know what kids watch on Saturday mornings. Probably YouTube videos, right?
TikTok videos about like vaccinations and conspiracy theories and stuff like that.
It's one to grow on, I think they say.
I have to say, at one point, my daughter did approach me and just said randomly out of the blue, you know that aliens don't really exist. They just keep top secret airplanes at Area 51. There's no actual alien bodies there.
Oh, I like that. That's a very logical. Is your daughter Spock? That was like a very logical thing to say. I kind of agree with that. I love these digressions. About 5 years back, I was walking on the street in Maryland because I was visiting in the summer, and there was some stupid sports game happening in Virginia, and the U.S. military overflew in one of those B-2 stealth bombers. And I'd never seen one or heard one. You hear this really weird sound. It doesn't sound anything like a normal plane. And then you look up and it's just the weirdest thing because it's totally thin when you look at it from a cross section. Like if it turns, like the lights on the wings look all really strange. And I remember being like, wow, I can completely see late at night, you're on shrooms in the Nevada desert and you see something like this overhead and you think it's time to call the X-Files. I can completely understand it. So, you know, prize for your daughter. She gets an award. She gets a gold star on her conspiracy theory chart.
Well, I provided her with some alternative facts stating that, no, actually, they are keeping aliens inside of Area 51. So,
yeah, it sucks that modern days have made conspiracy theories so unfun. Like, I loved conspiracy theories when I was a kid, and like Art Bell and like UFOs and reptilians and, you know, JFK magic bullets and like all of this stuff. And now it's just like the stupidest stuff. Bring back my Bigfoots and Loch Ness monsters and cryptids and all of that kind of stuff.
Bat Boy. Who owns the IP for Bat Boy these days? I don't know.
Is the National Enquirer still around? Not being in America, I don't shop at supermarkets anymore.
The Enquirer is, the Weekly World News is not, which was arguably the more factual newspaper yes. out there.
Well, you know, inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah, that was actually where I got most, if not all, my information from, was the Weekly World News. What is it? Godzilla ruined my marriage, says fuming bride. There was a whole full page story in the Weekly World News like a million years ago about some newlywed bride whose husband just watched Godzilla movies all night on their wedding night.
A reading from the Weekly World News, 1992. Godzilla ruined my marriage, says angry bride. Newlywed Jana Jirak says her marriage went on the rocks only 8 hours after she took her vows because of the movie monster Godzilla. The 18-year-old said she and her husband Leon got into an argument on their wedding night in a hotel just outside Rockford, Illinois, when Godzilla vs. the Smog Monster appeared on late-night TV and her groom wanted to watch it. She told a civil court judge, Leon swore he loved me and would cherish me always. Then he let some stupid Japanese horror film come between us. He humiliated me. He never gave our marriage a chance.
Did your wife write that? Did mine?
I couldn't help it. The special effects were just so good for 1962.
I thought you were going to say like she was really mad because your favorite Godzilla movie was Godzilla vs. Megalon or something. You know, when everybody knows it's actually Godzilla vs. Mechagodzilla. Speaking of cancellations, we have a cancellation of a major economy in the news today, do we not?
Oh, good Lord. I read the news today. Oh, boy, Matt. Japan just lost its crown as the world's third largest economy.
Japan's economy has contracted unexpectedly because of weak domestic consumption, pushing the country into recession and causing it to lose its position as the world's third largest economy to Germany. The data confirms that Japan's economy was the world's fourth largest behind Germany in US dollar terms last year. Domestic demand was particularly weak. All major domestic demand categories, including consumer spending, were negative. Only external demand, which is captured by exports of goods and services, made a positive contribution.
Well, I'm leaving.
That's it. Game over.
You know, I was into Japan's economy before it was the fourth largest economy.
Pure Germany scope, Matt. We're debuting the first episode next week.
You know, Japan shocked everybody. The reason that these things get reported is because, you know, they're economic news, you know, business news and all of that. But Japan really shocked the entire planet when it emerged as the world's second largest economy in the late 1960s. That was like a really big deal. That was like Japan's back. And it was only really 20 some odd years after the entire country had been leveled to the ground, literally, except for Kyoto.
Is this that economic miracle they keep talking about in church?
It is the economic miracle. It's prosperity gospel. And that prosperity in this case was like the American government dumping huge sums of money into the Japanese economy because it was their sort of war chest, their war materiel manufacturing place for the Vietnam and Korean wars. So blood money it may have been, but it really inflated the Japanese economy. It helped Japanese businesses rebuild. And many people say it's because of all that money that America pumped in the 50s and 60s that Japan emerged as this kind of like economic behemoth in the 70s and 80s and actually, you know, kind of bit the hand that fed it. If America hadn't, you know, done the Marshall Plan and rebuilt Japan and, you know, made it the world's second largest economy, would we have Japan bashing? Would we have Ronald Reagan deregulating the FCC so the Transformers could be on the air? That's literally why he did it.
Would we have Charles Bronson and Kinjite complaining about all the Japanese people buying the golf courses and the buildings in New York?
Geez, maybe you don't realize what's going on in this country, but you take the Japanese, for instance. They're buying hotels, office buildings, golf courses. They're taking over.
An amazing movie. You know, Hiroko still remembers to this day when you came over to the house and made her watch. You made her watch Kinjite. It is forbidden.
That's what I do. I'm like the Pied Piper of Kinjite. If you're a Japanese person and you know me, I'm going to make you watch Kinjite Forbidden Subjects because it's a documentary shot in real time.
She doesn't hold it against you. I think it's like one of those frog and the scorpion kind of things.
Which one's which? I'm confused.
Exactly. I don't know. But anyway, so Japan slides. So what is it? The current rankings. Who's on the leaderboard? America's number one because
Are there other countries besides the US and Japan and Germany?
I think it is. Is the leaderboard literally right now? Is it America number one, China number two, Germany number three? And Japan number four? Or is it China? China's not number one yet, are they? We need an economist. Doctor, is there an economist in the house?
Mongo only pawn in Game of Life, Matt. Me not economist. I can't really answer this question on the fly without going on the internet.
Exactly. Is this what the internet is for?
So as of earlier this month, number one, USA. USA. Number two, China. Number three, well, this is the way it used to be. Number three was Japan. And number four was Germany. Number five is India.
You know, on the China note, I don't know if you saw this unrelated to Japan, but semi sort of related to Japan and interesting news. The Chinese government, the powers that be, are now trying to compel everybody to stop translating the kanji character for dragon as dragon. They don't want it to be called dragon anymore because they feel that dragon as a Western word has too much baggage associated with it, that Western dragons are almost always evil and like fire breathing, whereas Chinese dragons fly in the sky and don't breathe fire and are auspicious. And so they want to rename it Long, which is the Chinese pronunciation, I'm probably horribly mangling it, of the kanji character for dragon or not dragon. How do you feel about that, Patrick?
So is there going to be like a mass promotional campaign to win hearts and minds about this kind of thing? I mean, I know there's two kinds of dragons. There's like, you know, the Hobbit, Lord of the Rings style, like guarding the treasure and the knight.
Yes.
Kind of slay it, I guess. And then the Oriental dragon that I see in the Chinese restaurant.
You know, the ones painted on the roofs of the ceilings of Buddhist temples and things like that. But I am very Okota about this, Patrick. We have plenty of friendly dragons. What about Puff the Magic Dragon? He doesn't breathe fire.
HR Puff and stuff. Our mayor, Matt, on Living Island here is a dragon.
Yes. Is Godzuki a dragon? I think Godzuki counts as a pleasant dragon.
It's a bit of a kaiju, Matt. If you're descended from a dinosaur, I don't think you really qualify as a dragon.
And what about Komodo dragons, huh? What about those guys?
I have questions.
This is what happens when you become the world's second largest economy. You can begin demanding that people call your dragons by other names.
Yeah, a name that we can't even remember right now.
I only know it because Rong, like, is the Japanese pronunciation of the Mahjong tile with the dragon character on it. So I guess that's what this is, Ron, which is pronounced more with an L sound in China. Chinese speakers, please help us out. So anyway, Japan, way down the leaderboards. Try harder next time, buddy, but buck up, little camper. You'll be a big economy again soon.
I mean, some of the things I saw as the reason behind this is the yen is like in the toilet right now.
Oh my lord.
Which is great. great if you're making foreign currency and you can turn that into your yenjimins, but otherwise it's not good because people aren't spending. But it sounds like external demand, exports of goods and services, specifically Nintendo and Pokemon.
The two major Japanese exports.
It sounds like those are the only things really driving the bus at this point.
Well, I am not an economist, but I can definitely tell you that the yen is brutal right now. The yen to dollar exchange rate is brutal and fueling, I believe, the huge number of foreign tourists who are coming here. Because now it's like, for Americans, visiting Japan is like visiting Mexico used to be like in the 1980s. Like your dollar goes a lot farther when, you know, it's pesos.
It's like the Salvation Army store.
It's just wild. Like one of my favorite coffee shops in Shibuya, the Fuglin coffee shop / cocktail bar, mobbed by foreign tourists in the middle of the week. I couldn't get a seat. Oh, the humanity. First world problems. But
did you put up a sign on the door saying Japanese only?
Said, man, what are you doing here? I wanted to put some bread in their jar, but I couldn't. There was too much of a line outside. So anyway, recession, you know, I can't really tell you because when you're in the middle of it, it's just, you know, life goes on here in Japan. Like average, you know, the price of tonkatsu hasn't gone up or down, you know, or anything important.
Are you talking about Gari Gari popsicles, Matt, that went from 60 yen to 65 yen, which was national news here in Japan?
Yes, it was. The Gari Gari Kun Index. Yes, I believe The Economist uses that now to track the health of the Japanese economy.
One thing I saw that was interesting is they're saying that spending is going to be really bad in January because of the earthquake that happened on New Year's Day here. So like when there's an earthquake, it can like really, really adversely impact the entire economy of the nation. I didn't actually realize that was such a huge factor.
Well, you know why? Because we're actually, this is conspiracy alert. No, it's actually not a conspiracy at all. It's just a fact. I don't think people realize how wasted the Noto Peninsula got. I mean, it looks apocalyptic up there. It literally, when you see footage of it or photographs of it, sometimes I mistake it for looking like Gaza or something like that. It's really that bad. And I think one of the reasons we're not seeing so much is because there's nobody up there right now. Like it's not being as widely broadcast as the Fukushima meltdowns and stuff, because those had kind of immediate relevancy to people in the cities. And it's really bad. Like that entire area really got laid low. It's a sad thing. We're just not seeing as much, you know, coverage of it, but it must be affecting the economy. It has to be. I completely believe this.
Well, they're saying like people don't spend as much on Pokemon and Nintendo after a national disaster.
It's like an economics textbook with like the simplified economic inputs and outputs. Like, you know, my macroeconomics course, microeconomics course in college. There's only two products Japan produces: Pokemon, Nintendo, Pokari Sweat. Maybe we can add that.
Micromen economics.
Diaclone toys. It's certainly a major food group in my toy collecting.
We're talking about recessions, but let's talk about something that is raking in the yenjimins right now, Matt. Gundam Seed Freedom, the new Gundam movie, sets box office records in Japan, grossing 2.68 billion yen, or approximately 17.8 million US dollars.
Okay, so first of all, congratulations to Sunrise. Congratulations to Gundam. Congratulations to director Mitsuo Fukuda, you know, and all of the people involved with this. But Seed Gundam, Gundam Seed, you, Patrick, have you ever watched it?
No, I had to look this one up. It's a sequel to both Mobile Suit Gundam Seed and Mobile Suit Gundam Seed Destiny, taking place 1 year after the events of Seed Destiny. Matt, I don't even know what took place on planet Earth a year ago.
Well, you'd be forgiven, Patrick, for mistaking this for a different sort of movie altogether, because there's not a single mobile suit on the poster. I think that is really the story here. Like, Gundam is important. That's another major Japanese export, is it not? But it's really evolved over the years. You know, it started in the 1970s as this like sci-fi space opera thing. It appealed pretty equally to boys and girls, guys for like kind of combat scenes, the girls for the melodrama. And as you know very well, this week, the week of February, well, the day is February 22nd. That's the 43rd anniversary of the Anime New Century Declaration in 1981, which was a Gundam promotional event that's sort of the Woodstock of the anime world. It was the moment like all of these anime fans, tens of thousands of them, descended on Shinjuku, surprising everybody that there were so many of them out there, and declaring that the 21st century would be an anime century and that Gundam would be successful forever. It looks like it all came true, didn't it? It certainly is an anime century, and Gundam is incredibly successful and popular, but just not the Gundam we know.
What's the first movie this year in Japan to have attendance of over 1 million people? So there's a lot of folks going to see
this. All in the same theater?
I hope so. Yeah, I mean, like $17.8 million is like chump change in America. Like if a movie made that amount of money in America, people would be dancing on its grave. But I'm assuming the budget here is like nothing. They probably did this like for very little money.
I mean, it's a testament, I think, to how anime is really churned out here. It's also a testament to the fact of how, you know, low the box office takes are for most animated features. And like, but then again, the budgets are as well. This is the first time a Gundam film has ever outsold Gundam 3, Mobile Suit Gundam 3 Encounters in Space from 1982. So that's a record that stood for what, like 40 some years. So it's like I don't know that the hurdle is very, you know, high here. Anime movies, unless you're somebody named Hayao Miyazaki or your film is called Your Name.
Or Demon Slayer or Spy
or Demon
Family.
Slayer. Yeah, like those really big, the biggest movies are either like tend to be either Jump or Miyazaki or Hosoda. So it's, you know, Gundam has never been a big earner at the box office. And I think people are just surprised this one's doing really well, you know, rather than like, oh my God, anime, like this is a new anime century, Patrick. This is great news if you're into Gundam Seed, which I'm not, but you know, no big deal if you are, that's good.
Yeah, by all means, like let us know if you're watching Gundam Seed Destiny or what is the other one, Gundam Seed. And like, if we're missing out on the story of the century here, I'm not entirely sure. My favorite Gundam anime of all time is in fact Mobile Suit Gundam 3 Encounters in Space.
That's a great one.
From 1982. I mean, when I saw that for the first time, I'd never seen 1 and 2. It was the first Gundam anime I ever saw. So I was really in the deep end. But I mean, if you watch all three of those movies, they set up so many things that pay off in such a big way in 3.
Yes.
It's such a well-told story. We got a listener question a few weeks ago asking us, what's our favorite Gundam anime? And I do have to put my foot down and say, for me, man, it's the Gundam movie trilogy because of number 3.
Well, 3 is where it really starts to get like kind of also like 2001-ish, like they really start to explore this whole new type thing and it gets really kind of metaphoric and symbolic and, you know, all of that.
Expansive. It's going above and beyond human consciousness.
It is. It's truly operatic. It's like huge in scope. And I don't think you get that so much anymore with even a lot of modern non-robot sci-fi. I think I heard somewhere that people make sci-fi movies without robots in them. But those, you know, I don't think you see the scope of that. As for me, I'm going to have to disagree here. As much as I love Mobile Suit Gundam 1, 2, and 3, my favorite Gundam series of all time is the OVA series, Gundam 0080, War in the Pocket. It's also one of the least Gundam-y Gundam series out there. I think maybe I would follow that with Zeta Gundam, just because it's so wacky and wild of a sequel to the first series. But it's tough to say. It's all good. Even the Gundams I don't like are good, except the ones that are bad.
Another thing they're saying about Seed Destiny is that the music from the film, the pop songs, the opening and ending credit songs are like ruling the charts here in Japan right now. I wouldn't know because there's so much great J-pop and J-rock to listen to already, Matt. And I can't tell the difference between any of it.
It's like Komura Tetsuya, the guy who wrote like the theme song for City Hunter and also the TM Revolution guy, he's performing it. So it's this kind of all stars of Japanese 80s, 90s, you know, anime, rock, what have you. It's like if Duran Duran did theme song to Deadpool or something like that.
Okay, boomer.
Exactly. Hey, TM Revolution is a boomer. That's an action, more of a Gen X thing. I'm Gen X, Patrick. Come on. So, yes. Gundam Freedom Seed, Freedom, Freedom Seed. Give me freedom from it. Let my people go.
I don't want your freedom, Matt. I don't want to fool around.
Well, so the Japanese economy is crashing, but the Japanese Gundam economy is on its way up to the stars.
The future is so bright, I got to wear shades. Unless they're mirror shades and I'm wearing sunglasses at night, like in this new video from Sora AI. It's time to get into the big story of this episode, Matt. We're going to talk about artificial intelligence, the mediocre Steven Spielberg movie, and Japan, the country that is now the fourth largest economy in the world.
People are all against artificial intelligence, but man, I'll take all I can get. My intelligence isn't so great. I could use some artificial intelligence.
Artificial flavoring, artificial coloring. Sure, why not?
I grew up on Kool-Aid. I grew up on artificial ingredients. Like, why not artificial intelligence? So yes, the big story of the hour is that the AI titan of Silicon Valley and thus the world, OpenAI, who you know from previous hits such as DALL-E, the system that puts artists out of business, and ChatGPT-3, which puts chatbots out of business.
Unless your business is making making like steampunk Star Wars fan art, in which case it's probably the greatest thing that ever happened to you.
This is it. You're done. But for actual creativity, let's just break this down. So the news today is that 2 days ago on Thursday, OpenAI released this new product or announced it. They didn't release it because it's not available for public use yet.
Like sex packets, it's not publicly available yet.
It's called Sora. And what Sora is a generative AI, meaning an AI that can create things based on its huge, you know, vacuum in database of all sorts of human-made content. It can make videos. You know, DALL-E made still images based on a text prompt, and ChatGPT is a system that you can engage with, a computer that you can basically talk to in plain English. Now, Sora is a system where you type in a text prompt and it makes an actual video. And the details of this are not exactly clear yet, like how long of a video does it make? You know, are there any parameters on it? But they released about 20 sample videos. And I was really struck, and I wrote an entire essay for my newsletter, blog.pureinventionbook.com, about this. A significant and measurable percentage of them are like Japanese inflected. In fact, the entire name of the product, Sora, is taken from the Japanese word for sky, which they say means, you know, symbolizes limitless creativity and creative potential. So there's this like real Japan inflection going on with this. Did you notice that in the videos?
I sure did. I watched two of them. One is kind of this drone shot style pan over of what the computer thinks is a contemporary Tokyo landscape with like cherry blossoms and like yakitori stands, people wearing cold masks. It looks like a cutscene from like one of the Sega Yakuza video games.
Yes, it looks like a video game.
It's not really quite photorealistic, but you know, it's pretty impressive just as something they probably generated from a few keyword prompts. The second video I saw was like a Zara model wearing sunglasses at night, walking around Shibuya and with like those Michael Mann rainy streets and stuff. Yes. Like that. And that one is a lot more impressive. It's moving in slow motion. There's a lot of emphasis on like lighting and skin texture. And that looks like a video game I want to play, specifically with C4 and sniper rifles.
Yes. That you can chuck off buildings. Then there was another video involving like looking out the window of a commuter train over the rooftops of what seems to be Tokyo. It looks very much like the view off of Chuo line kind of on the west side of the city. And that one was pretty impressive. It looked pretty good too. And then there's yet another one with a kind of kawaii character raking like a Zen rock garden. And then there's another one of origami birds. So what is that? Five. So like five out of the 20 are Japanese kind of influenced in some way. And then the name of the company is Japanese influenced. And like, I have a lot of feelings about this. Like, yeah. I personally feel that it was a deliberate choice because Japan is a very safe choice for people around the world. It's not like really politically contentious. Like everybody loves stuff from Japan. Everybody wants to go to Japan. So like using Japanese kind of inflected things to sell this really quite scary product, because it's going to undoubtedly result in a lot of propaganda and fake news and stuff coming out, is a sort of canny PR choice.
My friend just DM'd me right away and just said, bye-bye fashion models and game developers, ?
Yeah. Like people talk about how this is going to impact like the creative arts, but I think the number one thing it's going to affect is certainly look dev, which is like when you kind of come up with the appearance of what a game looks like, the kind of like rough animations and things like that. I think this is going to put a lot of people in the game industry out of business before it puts anybody else out of the business.
Do you think it'll put Japan out of business, Matt? It seems like there's already a recession here. Now people are building like fake Japans. They're building fake Tokyos.
Exactly. Well, you know, and that's the thing, right? So when you start looking at these videos close, like at first you're like, wow, this video is like totally generated by a computer. Weird. And then you start looking at it and you're like for instance, I mean, just to pick out one thing, that Shibuya woman, all of the signs are gibberish. All of the logos are gibberish. You know, and that's already putting aside the fact that like there's really like a lot of wonkiness in her proportions and the way she walks and like the way her feet hit the ground and like her legs switch positions at one point. So there's a lot of uncanny valley stuff going on in here. And some people were saying in response to the piece that I wrote, well, you know, setting it in this fictional Shibuya that most people probably haven't gone to hides the fact of of how fake it really is. And it hides the mistakes better than if you'd said it like in Brooklyn or something.
It's like Orientalism, right? You know, the mysterious Far East via technology again. I mean, I think some people have read your article and are trying to trace the kind of history of how we got to this point, why big tech fetishizes Japan so much. And there's a history of it, both in entertainment and in industry.
Big tech, there's always been this kind of weird love affair between Japan and Silicon Valley. Like, you know, Atari is named after, I mean, Atari just means win in Japanese. And Steve Jobs is famously obsessed with Sony and Japanese design and woodblock prints and like minimalism and all sorts of other things from Japan. So there's always been a kind of love for Japan. And now like the current generation of, you know, people in their prime were all raised on anime and Japanese content. That's kind of the story of Pure Invention, like how when we consumed all of this stuff, it changed our fantasies, it made them more Japanese. And so there's this hunger for Japanese things, I think, among a lot of Western people.
Specifically to travel here and to buy as much crap as they possibly can.
Yeah, no, definitely. Exactly. Definitely. I mean, because it's a consumer paradise here. Like everybody's like, oh, Japan, so zen, so minimalist. But then they come here and buy tons of stuff, which is a kind of interesting irony here. But the other irony of this is that it's not really a Japan being dreamed up by a machine. It's like Japan being dreamed up by a machine that's been fed nothing but content created by Westerners about Japan.
I mean, I think the big myth about AI is that people think it's like artificial intelligence. It's doing all the thinking itself, whereas it's more of like an elaborate copy machine. Is that how it works?
I mean, I thought you were going to say shell game, like three card Monty.
How does it work? You see the girl on the cover, you black out and she becomes your lover?
So actually, I've been looking into this a little bit, and obviously I'm no mathematician or anything like that, but I can tell you that the way these systems work is they're called transformers, which I find very amusing.
Jazz, Hot Rodimus.
Exactly. And that means Orson Welles is behind this. Imagine Orson Welles, you're like this giant planet-sized robot that's consuming other planets and also really cheap wine. Transformers, the transformer architecture is what underlies these large language models, which is what ChatGPT-3 is. And what these basically are is you'd have to train the system on huge amounts of pre-existing data, content. And this is one of the big reasons ChatGPT is so controversial, because they basically hoovered up the entire internet, meaning a lot of copyrighted content, like every newspaper article you can imagine, every book you can imagine. Our books aren't in ChatGPT-3, but in Llama. Like I know Yokai Attack and several other of my books are in there. They don't give any credit. They don't give any like, you know, royalties or anything like that. You get all of this material together and then you have to kind of compile it using a supercomputer. And this is the big reason why America is so ahead of this, because there's a lot of supercomputers in private hands there, like Microsoft, other big companies have them. In Japan, no private individual or company owns a supercomputer. They're all government owned. And this is one big reason why Japan is way behind when it comes to AI on the rest of the world, which makes it all the more ironic that Japan is apparently this badge of honor for AI creators in the West.
I mean, what about Chiron 5 and Gunhead? I mean, was that being used to generate AIs of like fake Tokyos?
What was it? Sharon Apple and Macross Plus. What are some good AIs in Japanese pop? There's the Megazone 2-3, Operator 3G. What's she called?
Eve Tokimatsuri.
So Eve. And why are Japanese AIs all pop idols? Why, Patrick? It's going to be really interesting. There's a lot of Japanese companies right now, startups that are trying to basically bootstrap and make their own versions of a domestic Japanese AI.
Were these all the guys who were trying to make domestic NFTs and crypto
this is the thing, right? So like NFTs were always bullshit. Like cryptocurrency was always bullshit, but AI seems to be producing a usable and kind of scarily usable product in a lot of ways.
Unless you like reading Japanese, in which case it will give you gibberish Japanese.
Well, yes. Or if you like translating Japanese, in which case it will replace you. It's tough out there, you know?
Can we get the computers who translate Japanese and the computers who make gibberish Japanese, can we get them together in the same room at the same time? Or is that a bad idea?
When I was a kid, I remember watching the movie Alien. Do you know? It's a movie. And there's several scenes in there where like the captain and other members of the crew of the Nostromo are querying their computer mother using just plain English prompts. And I remember thinking, man, that's never going to happen. And then the computer's like lying to them. And I was like, oh, that's never going to happen. A computer can't lie. And And now look at us. ChatGPT-3, you can just ask it questions straight up, and it lies. It lies. It hallucinates these things. I think we talked about this before when you looked me up and I looked you up on there, and it's like...
Some people call Patrick Macias the space cowboy. Some call Patrick Macias the gangster of love. Some people call Patrick Macias Maurice, because he speaks of the pompous of love.
I tried to ask it about the bonus situation, and it said I would get full shares. I don't know what that means, but...
Right. So it's... It's exactly. So we are, you know, people always complain, like, where's my flying car? Well, we don't have that yet, but we do have Mother from Alien. Like,
we do have incredibly disruptive technology. But there were two points in your article I did want to bring up here. One is that, well, that AI seems a little scary. It's a little freaky. So in some ways, big tech is sort of using Japan as this kind of safe space where people can go, oh, look at the cherry blossoms. Oh, I always wanted to go to Japan. Oh, I kind of like this. This is great.
Well, Japan is the world's safe space right now because, you know, this, the flip side of the bubble bursting and Japan becoming irrelevant in the eyes of kind of the powers that be around the world is that it emerges as this fantasy superpower. Like, you know, you were joking, right? About Nintendo and, you know, Pokemon being Japan's biggest exports. But when it comes to young people, when it comes to like millennials or, you know, Gen Z or even Gen Xers, that really, like, I was never like, oh man, let's smash a Toyota with a hammer like the boomers were doing. Let's blow up a Toshiba radio. I was always like, no, I want more Gundam. Please.
Is that called soft power, Matt? Is that what they call
it? I believe it is called soft power. That term coined by Professor Joseph Nye of Harvard University, meaning that you can get other people to like you. It's like a gross national charisma. That's what it is. And Japan really does have it. And I think the fact that OpenAI has this technology they know is potentially transformative and also very, very potentially scary, disruptive, scary, that they chose to kind of wrap it in these Japanese visual idioms. It's a testament to Japan's soft power. It's a testament to their marketing. And it's also a testament to how they know that they need this kind of soft and huggable, squishy boost from things because they're dealing in, you know, this is like, I'm sure these same things happened when people invented fire. You know, this is very transformative, but I think it could hurt a lot of people. And it did. It did. But fire didn't have the PR campaign.
And then we cut to the opening scene of The Terminator where like the earth is laid waste by Skynet.
I thought you were going to start with the chimpanzees in the beginning of 2001, like smashing bones, you know, something. You know what? This whole tool thing, it's going to result in a lot of problems someday.
Oh, no, we actually have to cut to the opening scene with the Texas Rangers coming into the island to stop Chiron.
Gunhead. What is the intro scroll on that is so amazing. Like, AI has taken over the planet. Now it all lives on this one island off the coast of Japan.
I'll play the opening crawl of Gunhead. I'll definitely play. I'm going to drop it like right here.
A handful of technicians and their families were stationed on the island as custodians. But the cruel fact was that human beings were unnecessary. On July 4th, in the year 2025, Chiron 5 declared war on the world. The Allies dispatched a Gunhead battalion to 8JO. The Great Robot War began.
I had the opportunity to hang out with Mickey Curtis, a.k.a. Boncho from Gunhead, and he expressed his displeasure that his character was killed off so quickly. So did I. I wanted that.
Yeah, me too.
I wanted that guy. I wanted more of him. I wanted him to be the hero.
Well, the minute Sora AI is available to the public, man, we can just make the Mickey Curtis Gunhead prequel, sequel, reboot that we've always dreamed of.
Well, actually, on a serious note, once this technology improves, you're going to see a spate of probably first in the form of scenes, like from movies, and then like probably do-overs of entire films. I think, how is Hollywood going to react to this? You know, when people are remixing, you know, IP that's owned by people. We're little people, Patrick, just like Deckard in Blade Runner when he gives in his badge. So like, I can't fight back when I see Yokai Attack taken into the Llama AI program. And actually, if you go to it and ask what a yokai is, the description is pretty evocative of what Hiroko and I wrote down in the beginning of Yokai Attack. I'm like, okay, well, this is kind of cool that it's in this mother brain, this thinking computer, thinking machine, to quote a Gunhead, but kind of uncool in the fact I didn't, you know, where's my money?
Okay, the first thing when this technology is available, I'm going to remake Blade Runner with all of the original choices for Deckard that were not cast in the film, okay? Starting with Burt Reynolds as Decker, okay? Yes. Then we'll move on to Al Pacino, Matt Dunkachino himself as Rick Deckard. Say hello to his little blaster. And then Peter Falk, Matt.
Oh my God, that's not true.
Peter Falk was in the running for Deckard. Oh, and just one more thing, Mr. Tyrell. What's the lifespan on these skin jobs?
The Columbo Blade Runner crossover I never dreamed of existing.
You wouldn't even have to like do any costuming or design for him. He just shows up like as Columbo.
Exactly.
And Dustin Hoffman banging on that hood of the spinner going, hey, I'm walking here.
Is this where Mr. Tyrell grabs him and he's like, plastics? Plastics, son. The whole world's going to be the Plastics. Like, you mean like the Japanese new wave band, the Plastics? Is that what The Graduate was really talking about?
Plastic Man? I'm not entirely sure. But yes, it's a bold new future, Matt. Opportunity and adventure, I believe is what they say.
A new life awaits you in the Shibuya Scramble. It's a pedestrian crossing of excitement and adventure.
2020年, Replicant 軍団, 人類に宣戦布告. Harrison Ford 主演.
Well, Patrick, you got your wish. We live in the future now. We live in the far future world of 2024. We're surrounded by AI. Gundam's at the top of the charts. Japan's economy's in the toilet. How you like them, apples?
I guess it's marginally better than the future predicted by A Boy and His Dog, a future I might live to see in the year 2024.
But definitely worse than the future predicted by a $6 million man, because I don't have robot parts yet, nor do I have an exploding briefcase like Oscar Goldman did.
Yeah, well, Matt, we're well into our 80s now. We are at episode 80, bit of a milestone here, but we'll be back next week with a new one. We want to remind everyone listening to the show to keep enjoying it. Spread the word about the Pure Tokyo Scope death cult to your friends and family.
And prepare for the upcoming pitched battle against AI and humanity.
Join the Texas Air Rangers today.
Yes. We'll drop you on top of the Chiron. What is it called? Chiron 5?
Chiron 5, a thinking machine, Matt.
We'll drop you on top of the Chiron 5 cooling tower so you can make your way down. That's our next episode. I swear, we're going to do that.
Okay. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye.
See ya.